From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of July 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Bruce Bostard will be here, too, to take up the cash grain market from the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Along the way, we'll check in on the agricultural news and hear what's been happening with those free trade agreements. Mr. Obama says, maybe after the recess, but parts of Congress are saying bring them on right now. And we'll stay in Washington for a couple of other stories, too. One of them having to do with SNAP, that's the nutrition side of the farm bill, and the other with the farm bill directly, or maybe more importantly, direct payments and ACRE. We'll hear from Nick Paulson on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
On this Friday afternoon, futures finished higher, or for the most part higher, in Chicago. September contract for the soft red winter wheat at $6.92 and a quarter, up 15. July at $7.93 and a half, 11 and a quarter cents higher per bushel. September corn futures at $6.90, 10 and three quarters higher. December at $6.85 and a half, up 12 and a half cents. March corn $6.98 and a quarter, 12 and a half higher, and the May at $7.05, up 12 and a half. July $7.11, up 12.5 cents for the corn, and next year's December at $6.21 and a half, 8 and a half cents higher. August soybeans $13.80 and a quarter cents, unchanged. September down a quarter, $13.81, and November on out were higher, but not by much. $13.88 and a quarter the settlement price for the November. And they finished up a quarter cent. January, $13.97 and three quarters, a half higher. The March at $14 and a quarter, up a half. And July soybeans, $13.98 and a half, up 1 and 1/2 cents. November beans, $13.44 and three quarters, up 0.75 cents. Oil, bean oil up 30 cents at $3.63, or bean oil up 3 cents at $56.51. It was the meal at $3.63 that was up 30 for the day. And the live cattle futures on the afternoon finished the August contract at $110.55, the feeders at $136.40, and the lean hogs at $100.82 and a half. They were up $2.72 and a half cents on this Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures at $99.83 a barrel, 70 cents higher. Ethanol, $2.94 and 2 tenths, up 4 and 7 tenths of a cent. Natural gas at $4.40 and a tenth of a cent, up 6 tenths of a cent. In the heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.12 and 8 tenths of a cent, up 2 and 8 tenths of a cent. Gold futures finished $14.50 higher per ounce at $1,601.30, and the Dow now at 12,680, just about 44 points lower. The dollar at 74.19 is up 0.17. The CRB up 2.6 at 347.93. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area looks like this for the day. There is an excessive heat warning in effect that now until 7 p.m. Sunday. This afternoon, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the area. Mostly sunny skies. It'll be very hot, a high near 96 degrees. The heat index as high as 108. North-northwest winds at 7 to 11 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 76. Tomorrow, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, that after 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Partly sunny, though, a high near 94 degrees for the most part, heat index at 107. Saturday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms before 1 a.m., mostly cloudy, a low of 76. Sunday, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly sunny then, a high of 92. And Sunday night, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, otherwise cloudy, a low of 72 degrees. And Monday, mostly sunny, a high of 87. Tuesday, sunny and 86. Wednesday, sunny and 90 degrees. And by the time we get to Thursday, mostly sunny, a high near 91.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. On the phone line with us in Lafayette, Indiana, is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Hi, Mike.
Hey there, Todd. How are you?
Well, it's warm outside, but the air conditioning's working here, so I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing great.
All right. Tell me about the marketplace as you've seen it develop over the week.
Well, we had some big cattle reports today, and I thought we might touch on those real quick, especially since we're at the LaSalle County Stockmen's Association on Wednesday night, and they were the beef cattle guys that helped us with our meeting, and they were so hospitable. But we got the monthly cattle on feed report out, and it was quite a shocker on the placements, Todd, 104% placed versus estimates of about 93.5%, so a big, big shocker, a lot more placements than expected. That's a great report for corn demand and should keep our corn feeding going pretty good through the fall. So that was the big highlight on the monthly cattle on feed report. Also, the marketings were a little bit heavier and better. On feed numbers were disappointing. So I wonder whether we may not bull spread the fats here, and also whether those October live cattle may not retest their May lows about around that 108 level. So that was the big highlight with the monthly cattle on feed, and the cold storage numbers came out. No big shakes there. And then we had the biannual cattle numbers come out. Not a lot of surprises there either.
Can you contrast that report with what you're hearing from the Southwest and the West, where either cattle are dying in parts of the pasture areas of the West or being just eliminated in Texas and other areas because of the severe drought, and what those two mean together?
Yeah, perfect question. It makes a heck of a lot of sense why those placements came out a lot higher than expected, because cattlemen down there are suffering. Some that I've talked to are suffering to the extent that they've never had to suffer before as far as death loss and rendering. We talked about that in Streeter on Wednesday night. The rendering facilities are going gangbusters right now, unfortunately, and, you know, 100, 200 head being, dying right there on the spot at a time, something I've never experienced as far as reporting and watching this type of heat do this kind of damage.
All right. So then I suppose you've been watching the weather forecast. What are the latest things telling you?
Well, really, the midday models said nothing versus what the morning models and the Thursday evening models were projecting. They continue to project relatively light rains for the Midwest, for the central Corn Belt, maybe a little bit more on the tail end for the eastern Corn Belt. But Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, they look like it's going to be hard to get some good rains, especially in the central parts of those states. The back-end models do show a little bit of cooling temperatures, and they do see that they do show a little bit of a flattening of the ridge, but my primary consultant has said don't trust that. That's 10-plus days out. We really need to get to early next week, see what this frontal boundary does in actuality versus what the models say, let the models catch up, and then they'll be able to predict probably with more accuracy what we're really looking at a week to 10 days out.
Does the action in Washington, D.C. concern you at all?
Yeah, and I think it concerns the trade. You know, one of the things that you can say about this week's grain trade is wheat led, and you have to wonder why in the world would wheat lead this market again, given the fact that we're in such a heavy-duty weather market and some of the most extreme temperatures in Indiana since 1988. And I think it's because the big funds are absent, and one of the reasons the big funds are absent is because of what's going on in Washington and also what's going on over in Brussels. The Europeans have let the Greeks default selectively. They've essentially said, don't listen to the ratings agencies, and Fitch has come out and said, we're cutting their debt down to default status, and so far the markets haven't reacted to that. But I think, generally speaking, if you had to wonder, if you haven't had rain in 5 weeks and you've seen 100-plus degree temperatures, you're wondering why the corn wasn't limit up and held gains and barely closed positive on the week, I think it's because the big fund money is probably on the sidelines waiting to see what's going to happen with this debt ceiling issue.
Yeah, but if that's the case, that would be speculator money. Would not the commercials be in looking for corn for the new crop?
Well, the commercials are probably different from the big funds. I mean, I think that's where Decatur, I saw Decatur basis fall and just collapse. I think it was 32 or 38 cents in 3 days this week. And I think that's where the commercials have essentially figured out that no matter what they bid up, they're probably not going to get hardly anything as long as it doesn't rain. So why keep bidding up, especially if the futures keeps going higher? So my bet is that you're going to start to see the spot basis be pushed out into the new crop fall basis in terms of improving it and making it look more attractive for producers, because they realize the shorter the crop is, the more on-farm storage space you're going to have, the tighter the farmer's going to be with his crop. So you're going to have to sweeten up the fall bid a lot, I think, as we stay dry.
Yeah, there'd be regional differences, though, of course, too, because if you went to the eastern Corn Belt, the far eastern Corn Belt, I suspect that's not the case, and it may be even more so the case. Is that right in the western Corn Belt?
100% right, but I will say that I think your conversation when I was on the road on the way up to Streeter, I think it was the Andersons fellow from Climbers you talked to, he talked about pulling corn in from Illinois, and that's why he was probably doing a little bit better than some of the other area elevators as far as not having to push his basis so much. I do think that region will expand. You'll get bigger and bigger and bigger in terms of having to search out corn to pull in for your demand needs. So as the weather next week, and this is where universally almost everybody I've talked to, whether it's a producer or a trader or someone I met at one of these meetings recently, they all say next week is just the big week, not just pollination, but also getting the grain fill started. And I think that's where the rubber's going to have to hit the road probably next week when it comes to the cash market and the potential for that basis. And like I said on Commodity Week last week, I still think we have a good chance for historically tight basis in central Illinois and Indiana if we don't get relief.
It's certainly interesting times.
It is, and it doesn't stop.
Indeed not. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Joins us from his office there in Lafayette, Indiana, on this Friday afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can visit us online and hear what Mike had to say again if you'd like. That's at willag.org or dial this number, 217-333-3434. We call that our mobile analyst portal. It's just voicemail, but updated at 10:15 and 3:15 each and every business day with either the opening or closing numbers and a bit of analysis. In today's agricultural news, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell took to the floor late Thursday afternoon to reiterate his commitment to passing the three pending free trade agreements with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea, and on reports that the White House has made a decision not to send the deals to Congress before the August recess. Admitting that the calendar was tight with a lot of urgent business to take care of, McConnell said the administration should submit the agreements as a show of good faith with its trading partners in those three countries. He said Congress could then work to pass them when they return from the recess. We'll stay in Washington, D.C., where a House Ag Subcommittee is searching for budget savings in the nutrition programs. The nutrition title, of course, accounts for more than three-fourths of the Farm Bill spending. The Primary Nutrition Assistance Program is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. That was formerly known as the food stamps. More than 44 million Americans receive SNAP benefits, an increase of nearly 70% since 2007. That's causing annual spending on the program to more than double to about $69 billion. It's a substantial sum, says Nutrition and Horticulture Subcommittee Chairman Gene Schmidt.
Given our current budget situation, we have a responsibility to examine whether we can reduce the amount without compromising the integrity of the SNAP program.
Full Committee Chairman Frank Lucas zeroed in on the program's broad eligibility provision,
which makes most if not all, households categorically eligible for SNAP if they receive any non-cash temporary assistance for needy families benefit.
The average monthly SNAP benefit was $226 in 2008. Today it's $289. Subcommittee ranking member Joe Baca, who disclosed he received food stamps at an earlier point in his life, warned that reducing the size and scope of SNAP would decrease worker productivity and result in less tax revenue for local governments. USDA Food Nutritional Service Administrator Audrey Rao testified the SNAP clientele has undergone a major shift in focus from welfare to work over time. Let's move from the East Coast to the Southwest, where they continue to burn up and ranchers have been culling herds because of the drought. And that's overwhelming Texas sale barns. There are reports of cattle being turned away because the sales are running so very long. Henderson County, Texas Extension agent Rick Hirsch says the culling is severe.
They're culling a lot deeper than they normally would. They're culling a lot harder than they normally would. They're culling into the heart of their herd.
Hirsch says that does not bode well for the future.
We're selling heifers that normally would be kept. That's the coming heart of what our herd would be, and a lot of producers are having to sell those just because they're either running out of grass or they're running out of water in some cases.
And Hirsch says it's not just in his area. He's hearing similar reports statewide. And finally today, the University of Idaho and the U.S. Department of Agriculture recently published a new study that shows biodiesel production continues to be energy efficient in making biodiesel for diesel vehicles and home heating, demonstrating long-term sustainability. The study shows for every 1 unit of fossil energy needed to produce biodiesel, 5.54 units of renewable energy are created. National Biodiesel Board Director of Sustainability Don Scott says the study shows the clear trend that biodiesel production continues to improve when it comes to efficient use of resources. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Don't forget to visit our website this evening at about 6 o'clock. We'll post Commodity Week, our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural markets, to willag.org. That's willag.org. Our panelists in studio this week will include Matt Bennett of TGM, Dale Dirk-Coles from AgriVisor, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson. That's Commodity Week, a weekly look at the world of agricultural markets, posted to the website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this evening. We know as the deficit reduction debate rages on in Washington, the likelihood that fixed direct payments will be reduced or completely eliminated in the next farm bill continues to increase. However, as you'll hear, the potential changes to other farm safety net programs is less clear. The fact that farmers receive payments, even during periods of high farm profits, tends to be the strongest and most consistent criticism of the fixed direct payment program. This implied desire to reduce the inefficiency of the agricultural safety net can help to guide additional changes to commodity title programs, which could help reduce farm program cost while providing more timely support, thanks Illinois Ag Policy Specialist Nick Polson. The University of Illinois Ag Economist says one option discussed and supported in the Midwest is a revenue support program based on a county-level revenue measure, and that it could take the form of a modification to the existing acre program.
It hasn't really necessarily been a formal proposal yet, but one of the things that some of the commodity groups in the Midwest have talked about, for example, the Illinois Corn Growers or the Iowa Farm Bureau, they've talked about if we're going to have to give up a chunk of the direct payments or direct payments in their entirety, could we use some of those savings to strengthen or modify some of the remaining programs in the safety net? And shifting this acre program from a state-level trigger to a county-level trigger is one idea that has been tossed around.
To that end, Paulson decided to see just what might have happened if a county-based acre policy were in place over the last several decades.
Yes, we did a historical analysis. Basically, we took, since this is based on state-level yields and national prices, that data is available back quite a ways. So we looked back through the late 70s and basically just looked at what this program would have generated for payments had it been designed on a state-level index as it's currently designed versus a county-level design that is very similar, just using county yields instead of state-level yields. And So over that 30 to 35 year period, we just compared what types of payments would have been triggered, how often they would have been triggered, and what the kind of the average level of those payments would have been.
What he found was not unexpected. The historical analysis shows a county-based acre program would distribute funds in larger amounts and more often than a state-triggered program. It's a program not likely to be well-received in Washington, D.C., where the budget axe continues to fall. Still, if you drop the coverage level, then things get interesting.
But if you reduce that coverage level, you can end up with payment levels that are pretty similar. And even with the higher payments at the similar coverage level to the state design, you could pay for the increased cost of a program like that with the reduction in direct payments that we're expecting in the next farm bill, or a portion of those reductions.
If you'd like to see the dollars and cents of Nick Paulson's work on the ACRE program, that is possible. Just look up ACRE on the FarmDoc website. Type FarmDoc Daily, all one word, into Google. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain market. On the phone line with us this afternoon is Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Decatur has been turning down the ratchet on basis. Can you tell me how far it's gone and why?
Well, they have lost quite a bit. I don't watch Decatur as closely as some other markets, but basically all the markets have broken this week. Decatur took, I think, like an 8 to 10 cent drop. The CN we've seen down 8 to 10 cents into the southeast. The CSX and the NS have broken back, and the river too. Part of it is just your transition from old crop to new crop as you have big inverses out there. If I'm a processor, an end user, I want enough bushels to get me through to new crop. I don't want any extra paying a dollar premium for it. So you're trying to buy just enough to get you by. We've started seeing some early harvest down in Georgia, in the far south delta, so we're starting to see some of that come off. So that's putting a little bit of local corn into like the southeast chicken markets. So that's taken some of the pressure off the East Coast trains, and those have been what's really leading the basis rally.
Now, producers in this area, to the best of our knowledge, and I suppose they don't have much left, have been waiting and have been patient and watched this basis rally. Will they have another opportunity to watch it tighten back up before we get to their harvest?
Typically, we lead having enough bought a couple times. There's a couple of head fakes in there first before there's enough cover to get through. So you see the bases take a step back. The bushels don't charge after it. And then you see it spike up again to add a little bit more coverage.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are at 7:30 on nearby corn, 6:67 on the new crop, 13.90 on the nearby beans, and 13.57 on the new crop.
Thank you so much, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company. He's in Ludlow, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. We'll say so long to some of our radio stations at this point. And for the rest of you, I'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and we'll hear not the weather forecast, but from U of I's Daryl Good.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
On this day in agricultural history in 1822, Gregor Mendel was born. Mendel was an Austrian botanist whose work was the foundation of the science of genetics. working mainly with garden peas, some 28,000 plants over 7 years, he discovered what was to become known as the laws of heredity. Mendel coined at least two present-day terms in genetics, recessiveness and dominance. In 1915, Sir Sanford Fleming died. He devised the present system of time zones while working for the Canadian Pacific Railway. In 1954, the Miller Pesticide Amendment was passed. It established procedures used by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to determine the maximum allowable pesticides that can remain on raw agricultural products for human consumption. The amendment stated no additive shall be deemed to be safe if it is found to induce cancer when ingested by man or animal, or if it is found after tests which are appropriate for the evaluation of safety of food additives to induce cancer in man or animals. And in 1993, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission approved final rules prohibiting the practice of dual trading by floor brokers unless an exemption is granted by the CFTC. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The demand-based rally in the corn market came to a screeching halt a few weeks ago with the release of the United States Department of Agriculture's June acreage report, but the market has rallied back. A number of factors, says Daryl Good, combine each year to determine the U.S. average corn yield. Good is an ag economist at the University of Illinois. Among those factors, temperature and precipitation during July are the most important. Crop yield models have long confirmed the large yield impact of July weather, he says. The most favorable weather conditions in July in the heart of the Corn Belt consist of temperatures that are modestly below average and precipitation that's about 25% above average. These are the kind of conditions that were experienced in 2009 and contributed to the record high U.S. average yield that year. Well, historically, such conditions over large areas have been rare. Now, Good notes weather conditions in July and earlier this year have been far from ideal in many areas. Planting was late in portions of the eastern and northern corn belts. Southern portions of the U.S. have experienced hot and generally dry conditions for an extended period. And the central and northern growing region areas have experienced widely varying weather conditions during the planting and the early part of the growing season.
The continuation of high temperatures in southern areas and the expansion of hot weather to much of the Corn Belt this week raises additional concerns about corn yield. Average July temperatures in the Corn Belt may rank among the highest since 1960. In addition to the high temperatures, corn yield potential may be threatened by the expanding area of dryness over the last few weeks. For the first half of July, precipitation was well below average in large portions of Illinois and Indiana.
The less than favorable July weather, says Good, in many areas has reduced corn yield potential. The overall impact on the likely U.S. average corn yield will be influenced by weather conditions in the last week of July and into August. The importance of the 2011 U.S. corn yield is underscored by USDA's projection of record consumption of U.S. corn during the 2011-12 marketing year. The most recent projection, released July 12, forecast consumption at 13.5 billion bushels. Daryl Good says that's 195 million bushels above expected consumption during the current marketing year.
Stocks at the end of the 2011 marketing year are projected at 870 million bushels, or 6.4% of projected use. A yield below 156.5 bushels would force a reduction in the projected level of consumption. A continuation of relatively high livestock and ethanol prices, along with growing Chinese demand, suggests that high corn prices would be required to curtail consumption.
Well, the nature of the 2011 planting and growing season, then, creates a large amount of uncertainty about the size of the corn crop. Small inventories and strong demand increase the importance of that crop size.
As always, the USDA's August production forecast will be highly anticipated as it will establish a benchmark for forming production expectations. All of the uncertainty makes it difficult to judge the overall price direction, but it appears there is more production risk than currently reflected by the corn market.
You can read Daryl Good's thoughts about the commodity markets on the University of Illinois Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily, all one word, .illinois.edu. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.